Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's special episode of Repeak. My name is Stephanie Kim, and as always, I'm with my co-host, Diana Olympia. We're recording this on Friday, June 12th. Black Lives Matter protests continue to take place across the U.S. and internationally to take a stand against police brutality. Our show is meant to be a fun escape, a celebration of pop culture, but it's also a place where we'll aim to keep diversity top of mind as our conversations and coverage progress. As two Asian American women, we stand in allyship with the Black community and wanted to take a moment to explore and address our current moment and discuss how it's affecting the books, TV, media, and movies that we consume, as well as our workplaces. We have our very first special guest joining us today, Dr. Akilah Kadeh. Dr. Kadeh is the founder of Change Kadeh, a consulting firm that specializes in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and she's worked with a range of companies including Google, Lululemon, Everlane, and more. If you're interested in Dr. Kadeh's work, please follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Change Kadeh or go to her website, changekadeh.com. That's Change, C-H-A-N-G-E, Kadeh, C-A-D-E-T.com. Now more from our interview with Dr. Akilah Kadeh.
I'm really excited that you're here with us today, so thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm excited to be here too. And I'm honored to be on this launch of your podcast.
So. Yes. Welcome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
We're so excited to have you. So I know this is kind of like biggest understatement of the year, like been a really rough couple of weeks for everybody, but for Black people especially. And I would just like to know, like, how are you doing? I know it's really hard to answer that question, but like, are you okay?
Yeah, it's so funny. People are like, what do I say? So, because I am a very proud and unapologetic Black woman. So people know that I'm Black. And so they're like, ooh, how do I start a conversation with you? So how are you doing is a weird question to ask right now. Because, you know, if you just Google just right now, like news, and then you would know like what's going on. So what I always recommend, questions to ask, Black people, Black friends, Black family members, are the following. Did you eat today? What are you doing for self-care? People know that I work in diversity. Thank you for the work that you're doing. How can I support you? Those are better ones, but in the sake of this podcast,
I do have a self-care question.
I'm all for the self-care question. I may fail at that. But I am right now very busy and in a lot of demand. This week of the recording, people realize that Juneteenth is a thing. And yeah, people are wanting me to provide Juneteenth content or talks, which I'm happy to do because I'm like, thanks. Finally, I do that. I am triggered. I am tired, but I'm also hopeful. And so, yeah, that's how I'm doing.
Well, the hopeful is good.
Hopeful is new. Hopeful was 3 days ago. Hopeful's- yeah.
What happened 3 days ago that made you more hopeful?
Part of it, great question. Part of it was, this is week 3, day 18 or 19 that I've been working straight. So, so I can't even tell you how many meetings I've had. I've had a lot of meetings. So talking to some brands and some companies, for-profits, nonprofits about their intentions and what they're wanting to do this week has been helpful. Seeing more statements that say, Black Lives Matter, Black community, Black people, anti-racism, white supremacy, white privilege. I'm like, ooh, yay. And so that's brought some more hope for me since I focus my time in the workforce. But the other thing is that I've accepted that I'm this person that individuals are looking to for education and support, encouragement, inspiration, regardless if they are from the Black community or non-Black people. And I've really accepted it and am now honored to be in these places where I can help individuals and also companies.
I was just curious to learn a little bit more about your journey or kind of career journey, or what brought you to this work, basically. You know, if you were working in corporate environments before, or if this is what you've always been doing, just kind of trying to, I'm just curious about your kind of your personal journey to this work.
Yeah, great question. I'd love to answer this one. My background is in health and public health. So my career is being a public health practitioner. Originally I was pre-med, chemistry is the devil. And I was like, fuck this shit. And decided to be on the, So I decided to be on the administrative side. I wanted to support physicians and nurses, providers, administrators. So I worked in nonprofit, for-profit, for good, large health systems. So I did spend some time, cities, counties, public health departments, and I did spend some time in the corporate sector of the health world. And there was a job that I had that I loved. Loved the boss that I had. She had a huge promotion, brought me along with her. And in that time, I had to get all the seed funding. I received all the seed funding in like about 6 months time. And then she was like, just kidding. Never gonna promote you. Not gonna pay you for the work that you did. And I was like, wait, what? And it was hard because when she's a woman of color and we worked so well together and I had a lot of trust with her, and it was professionally heartbreaking to experience that. And so I decided that I was going to finish school. So I was working full time and getting my doctorate full time. So I just like did the job of how I was supposed to do. I no longer wanted to be the traditional Black person in the workplace, or the traditional woman of color in the workplace, which is going above and beyond and doing all the extra stuff and being on the committees. I just did my job like a white man. And I was able to get my doctorate, and I went into a more of a corporate environment in a health setting, and I was quickly discriminated against for being Black, for being a woman, for being educated. I was told I couldn't use my doctor title, even though my predecessor had a doctor title. I was told in a one-on-one meeting that my boss, a white male, said to me, I didn't think you were that smart when I interviewed you, but you are smart. And I was like, I'm not sure what you want me to do with this. I don't know what, I mean, my doctorate's like the name of this department, and I have 15 years of experience at the time. And I did the stuff in larger environment, health environments. And so I said, I'm gonna need some time to build trust with you. And then he fired me the next week. And so when I was fired, it was one of the things where the job I had prior, where the woman of color promoted and like never paid me for the work that I did, that gave me the diagnosis of severe depression, because the workplace became incredibly toxic to me. I felt like every day was like PTSD. I was also being bullied. It's a longer story. And so it was rough. And so I worked, you know, saw a therapist, and I did some eat, pray, love shit, went to Thailand, came back in a matter of months. I had this new job, and I was feeling very like I made it. I was top floor, fancy building, power suits. I felt very Olivia Pope. I had a six-figure salary. I had all the perks that I felt I deserved for being in a doctoral level position. And then this white guy was like, you're not good enough, even with all the stuff I did. And so I reflected back, and I was like, okay, so I can go into another corporate setting. I can go into another 9-to-5 job, but I don't want to be in a position where I'm doing all these things that hurt myself so much, where I have major depressive disorder, to make them feel comfortable about themselves, them usually meaning a white person or a leader or person in power. And I didn't want to be severely depressed. So while I was finishing my doctorate full-time, working full-time, I started this company, Change Cadet. And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go full-time into my consulting firm. And that's what I did. I took the experience of reflecting back on these horrible things, and even positions before where I was again too Black, too much of a woman, too educated, all these biases and isms. And I was like, well, what could I do if people never felt like that? Or if people were starting to feel like that, could change their situation to be in a healthier environment where they can feel valued and appreciated. And that's what I've been doing for 5+ years now.
That's awesome. And this is something I think you've talked a lot about before, and I'm curious because I feel like right now semantics and language is really important, and mm-hmm. some of this stuff is new for some people. And in the conversations that I've observed so far, I feel like some of the words are getting conflated together, or there's just some confusion around what people looking for change are really looking for. So mm-hmm. I think there's like non-discrimination or like anti-discrimination. There's diversity or inclusion, and then what you talk about, which is more belonging. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for you, would you agree that those are all different things? And if so, how would you define them? Because I think they're different, and I feel like some people are kind of like mixing all those things together and saying, no, but like my company's diverse, or like we don't discriminate. And I feel like there's a disconnect there, at least from what I've observed.
Yeah, there's a disconnect. So diversity and equity, you see D&I a lot for a lot of brands and companies. Those are the sexy words. Those have been the sexy words,
yep.
you know, for the past 10, 15 years.
Yep.
and then there's inclusion. So then people have DEI programs. So diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yep. And that's great too. But the problem is that a lot of companies aren't spending time on the thing that I spend most of the time on, and where I start is with belonging. So belonging is the most important thing, because it is making sure that people are valued and appreciated in the workplace. They can come to the workplace and be their selves. They can come to the club and be themselves. They can go to their soccer team and be themselves and be comfortable with that. Companies can have diversity, companies can have equity, and companies can have inclusion, but they very rarely get to a place of belonging, because leadership is typically very male, very white, mm-hmm. very the same. Right. Mm-hmm. And you don't have diversity there. And so it's like a straight up struggle bus for everything of what they're doing, because it's like, but that doesn't affect me. So I don't understand, you know, why we would talk about that. Mm-hmm. So the way I explain all of those things, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, is diversity is being invited to the party. Mm-hmm. We hired you. You're here. Congrats. equity is getting a cut from the door. So they're like, ooh, we'll have to make sure that all women are getting paid fairly, or, you know, we're going to give you this middle management position as a Black Indigenous person of color. Inclusion is being asked to dance. All right, we'll give you this. We'll still give you this promotion. And that's pretty much it. But a little bit more with inclusion. Sometimes you'll have individuals who are part of the policymaking, part of the procedures that yeah. happen, and part of the culture to a certain extent, because why? White people are still leading the organization. So if you have the diversity committee read your updated policy and procedure manual or handbook, and then you're like, thanks, you did your job, and not taking any of the notes, you are being asked to dance, but not like that, right? And belonging is dancing however you feel. So again, mm-hmm. diversity is being invited to the party, equity is getting a cut from the door, and inclusion is being asked to dance. Belonging is dancing however you feel. So you really want companies to dance however they feel.
I love that analogy.
That's great. That's awesome. Because, yeah. Because I think, and that's what I heard kind of from what you were describing in terms of not, I mean, obviously not being recognized for the work, but that's where I feel like a lot of these companies, I'm very skeptical, because they're, I feel like a lot of them are releasing these statements or putting out these policies. But to your point, I'm wondering how they're really going to get to a place of belonging and what that really looks like. So,
yeah. And I think the important thing, and some companies have started to do it as of this week, is really moving towards being an anti-racist company or organization, agency, whatever they call themselves. And there's a lot of hesitation in the words anti-racism, which I find so funny. 3 weeks ago, it would be not impossible, but it'd be a little bit harder to do anti-racist work. And that usually would sometimes coincide with trauma in the workplace. Yeah. So, you know, the backlash, the anger from the white guy, and he's yelling at the black woman. And it's like, ooh, we need to do some social justice, anti-racism, de-escalation work. But now companies are working to be more proactive mm-hmm. instead of reactive.
Some of them.
Right.
Some of them.
You know, some of them. Some of them are doing it because it looks cute.
Yeah, that was my major concern with all of this, because I have felt like a lot of people are talking the talk and not really walking the walk or taking any actions to move toward a place of more belonging. And I specifically voiced that to my, very uncomfortably to my managers the other day, but like, thankfully, they have said that they've listened and they are going to try and implement all of these new policies. And, but there's also a part of me that's like very, saddened by this, mm-hmm. like now, like this is what it took for you to take this conversation seriously. You're gonna like do this now when like the world is literally on fire and mm-hmm. people have been murdered, and like this is what it took for you to like just mm-hmm. acknowledge that this is a thing that
exists.
What's
really worse is that there are people who still choose to not think things are terrible. Like, this is an inconvenience for them.
Right. Yes.
And that's the part where it's like, yes. Oh, really?
Yes.
Now? Right now? Like, you know, like saying the world yeah. is on fire is true. Yeah. I mean, there's protests all over the world in support of Black lives and humanity for Black people. Mm-hmm. And I say this over and over again for white people who just are they just don't understand. The Amish are protesting. Okay. The Amish are protesting. They're going against how they live and their values and morals to be like, you know what, this isn't right. I know we don't have anything happening with anything plugged in. This isn't right, you know? And you have that happening with
it
Amish people.
To be Amish.
Right, who are also white, who are like, ooh, no, not okay. And then you'll have, you know, the Amy Coopers of the world saying like, oh my God, I can't wait till my feed isn't like full of black people. Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel like this past week in particular there's been a big reckoning with specifically in the media and publishing industries. At Bon Appetit in particular, the editor-in-chief stepped down recently due to a brown face photo that resurfaced on his via his wife's Instagram. I don't know why anybody ever thinks that brown 14. Face is okay. just like it's
brown
all a
face,
bad idea.
Black face, stop it.
And not only that, but like the unequal treatment of people of color in within the company and within different media organizations. So I just wanted to kind of get your perspective on like I think representation in publishing and media is really important, but like what are steps people can take to actually make sure that Black people and more people of color are given these opportunities?
Yeah, one is understanding the Black dollar. So Black people have money. Some white people don't understand this. Some non-Black people don't understand this. So they can decide where their dollars are going, right? So there's that. But you know what a lot of these companies are more afraid of? The conscious white consumer. So this is someone who's like, what are you doing for anti-racism? And what does your board look like? And what does your leadership look like? And they're choosing to spend their dollars here in Oakland, like Marcus Bookstores. It's been around forever. It's a historical landmark with who they are in the Black community and what they've done for the Black community, and choosing to buy their books there instead of Amazon. So they have to be aware that there's a lot of money behind anti-racism. There's like a lot. So is that. So what companies need to do is diversify their leadership. And diversify leadership means not just having the chief of diversity be your token person of color. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there's amazing Black women that are doing amazing diversity work at these really large brands, and I'm fans of them and stands of them, and it's fantastic. There's nothing wrong with that. But if that's the only person that you have in your leadership team and your executive team, you're upholding values of white supremacy. So it's my favorite thing to say, upholding values of white supremacy. So brands need to understand, companies need to understand that if they are choosing to not diversify their leadership, they're adding to systemic and institutional problems that are harming Black people in America. And if they don't want to understand that, then they're going to lose money. They're going to lose money. Bon Appetit has had issues. Vogue has had issues. Refinery 29 has had issues. All this week, these are people who read, right? These are people who, you know, like, some of the stuff is paid, a lot of it is free, like content. And they're like, no, not cool. And amplifying and uplifting voices. That's the external side. On the internal side, it's the same thing. You also now have non-Black people who are like, ooh, I may have added to microaggressions. I don't want to do that anymore. So I'm going to want to promote this person. I'm going to want to hire this person. And if the executive leadership, if it's just a whole bunch of white guys chilling or white women, then those individuals are going to get frustrated, disappointed, angry, and they'll move on. Once we get through this pandemic, they'll move on, you know, to another place. And so it's really important for people to realize that there are consequences to choosing to uphold values of white supremacy and making sure that they are partnering with Black brands, that they are bringing in obviously more Black employees, but that these Black employees feel safe, valued, and appreciated, belonging in the workplace, right? And it's also important for my favorite, these companies and brands to maybe move past the Black box. You know what I mean?
Right.
So social media is equally important. Those external messages are also equally important for companies to look at with how they are continually providing content, amplifying Black voices, businesses, companies, partnering with them, talking about how they're partnering with them, also talking about their journey of being an anti-racist organization, but continually posting. That platform is a way to start to change behaviors and attitudes. That platform is to assure your consumers that you are in support of Black lives, you are anti-racist, not a President Twitter, AKA Trump supporter. These things are important because people are in a place of awakening.
I'm curious because I think you're also known as the Olivia Pope of diversity inclusion. I think I saw that somewhere.
I am.
I would love to hear about some of your hardest fixes and what made them difficult. Because just from, you know, not being in your position, I just assume from my personal experience that the biggest barrier to change is that C-suite. And that if you can't get those people to buy in, it's going to be really hard, which is full disclosure, what I'm dealing with right now, me and my colleagues, where we're trying to yell as loud as we can. And I think ultimately it feels like if we can't get Mr. CEO to care, it's an uphill battle to say the least.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with what you just said and I'll go back to the question. Be careful of how much work you want to do to get Mr. CEO to understand. He's probably white. White people do not have to care. Not having to care is in fact a privilege. And so what a lot of people do not realize is for white people in leadership roles in these companies, in order for them to be anti-racist, in order for them to support their Black employees, Black Indigenous people of color employees, they have to become powerless. They have to relinquish control. And that isn't beneficial to them. So why would they do that? You know, by now, again, the Amish are protesting. By now, if they don't see why it's important to have, you know, resources and dollars, individuals, people, things, content, talk, strategy, values, roadmaps to assuring that it becomes an anti-racist organization or a place of belonging. Now, this is week 3, since George Floyd was lynched. This is week three since the white woman is telling a black person what to do in Central Park. So they are making a choice to not use their privilege for good. So sometimes you have to just let it go because it's not worth your time or energy.
Hmm. And that's definitely the case still to this day. I mean, there was us saying it internally because people were yelling, but that was about it. And it was about as generic as you could be. And it didn't include the statement Black Lives Matter. And, you know, there's all these other efforts.
Did you get the hashtag BLM? That's always fun when they're like, all people feel valued, and then they'll throw in a people of color and then hashtag BLM because they can't say black.
We know, not even the hashtag BLM. And it's Mr. C is actually not white, which is an interesting complication, because then they like to say that it's like, quote, a minority owned business. And it's like, cool, but that doesn't equal belonging.
Okay, well, here's the other thing that some people don't realize. Non-black people of color, some also benefit from privilege, white privilege.
Totally.
Because they're white assimilating or white passing.
Totally.
So white assimilating means you assimilated to white culture, white people being supreme at the top, white supremacy. That's how white supremacy is word. And they also like the control and the power that comes from it. They also will view themselves in a higher regard than black people. They can be incredibly hurtful to communities of color as a result of that, because white people will be like, well, that's a person of color, or we are a minority owned business, so thus therefore it's fine, like we're following the lead of a person of color, so we're doing it right. But the black lived experience is different than
absolutely
a Latinx experience, a South Asian experience, you know, Filipino experience. Like, there's so many differences and nuances that are there, and there's cultural stuff too. So, like, I'm the child of an immigrant. I'm a first gen kid, so I knew the importance of education, what I had to do, and why my dad came here, because he wanted to make sure that we had blah, like all the greatest hits. But I can't detach from my blackness. So I have an experience of privilege that some other non-black people of color can potentially take advantage of, or the messaging of even simple stuff like not learning native language and not, you know, so many, I'm not going to go all the way down that fun rabbit hole. But just know they can be equally as powerful as the white woman or the white man in those leadership roles. Yep. So you want to know about a struggle bus situation that I've had to deal with?
Yeah.
Okay. So a long time ago, I worked with a tech company, and they asked me to come in to work with their diversity kind of task force group to help with their diversity strategy, understand how to enact change around diversity, equity, inclusion. They didn't know anything about belonging. and so I did. So, you know, it was a long day, gone through staff and content. And the highest person in HR people was there for the global, so the highest level. White guy. Just raving about everything that was going to happen for Women's History Month. There's Olympians coming in and celebrities, and we're going to have this food and then this day and all this stuff. And I was like, great, wonderful, wonderful. What are you doing for Black History Month? And he looked at me and he's like, when's Black History Month? And I said, right now. Because it was February. And he was like, oh yeah, no, we don't have time to put anything together for Black History Month. I said, you have 20 days. You can bring in a speaker, a panelist. They could have literally brought me in. You can cater food from Black owned businesses. There's so many things. Yeah, we just don't have the capacity for that. I said, cool. So just know that when you talk about diversity work, it's for women. And he looked at me and he's like, wait, what? I said, you don't want to do anything for Black people. So that's, you're drawing the line. That's where you're drawing the line. You're like, oh, that's as far as I'll go. Do moms, you know, I'm going to make sure moms feel supported and the women here feel supported. And then I was like, okay, well, so communicate that to everyone, that you're only, your diversity work is only for women. So they know, because your employees of color are thinking that you're doing this diversity work, so it's an inclusive place.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not happening. So, and then I was like, you'll probably have a great Pride Month, yeah, which is great. Like, celebrating Pride Month is important. But what I always tell people is that if you're only celebrating Women's History Month and Pride Month, you're just celebrating white people.
That makes sense.
You know, when you work with tech companies, a couple things happen. One, you always get a tour. Two, free food. Like, you know, they're like, look at the snacks, take snacks. And I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, much. Right? So much free food. So,
in that process, I was with the people of color, and they're like, thank you so much. And I was like, I know, it's probably the last time I'm going to see you, but, you know, reach out whenever you need me. And it's been a long time, and they check in with me from time to time, which is nice.
That's good. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you ever get any like positive updates? Like, where are they now? Where people are saying like, hey, you came in like 5-10 years ago, and I just want to let you know that now everybody belongs, or anything like that. Any like on the, to flip it on the positive side?
The positive updates I tend to get are, I left, and I'm like, yay. I'm so happy for you. What are you doing now? Or I started my own company. Yay. You know, and those are the updates that I like. If people don't continue work with me, then they aren't ready to do the work, and there's nothing I can do to help them out. There's also people who are really happy with the work that I'm doing and saying like, this has happened, or we have this now. And I'm like, yay, that's awesome and wonderful and great. Or even I moved to a different team, so we're able to do X, Y, and Z stuff now. Because diversity is this weird thing in companies, because sometimes they're just like this little bucket. And other places it's organizational wide, because you do have buy-in from the highest level. And so my whole thing is celebrating the little wins. So if I get a little win update, I'm like, all right, that's great. Title changes. I love title changes when people are like, I got a title change. You're getting paid for the work you've already been doing. Yes. Right, like earlier when I was you asked me why I'm feeling hopeful, it's like, you know, I'm in the position and opportunity to help primarily non-Black people understand why it's important to support my community and support Black people. And that is a privilege that I have. And I will do this work as long as my mind, body, spirit, and soul allow. The thing about being Black in America is that you are constantly thinking like, was I promoted because I was Black? Did I get this opportunity because I'm a diversity hire? You know, and this is something that we always think about. And now that it's so rampant with like, okay, we want to do these things for Black people, you have to decide like, what is the real intent here? So that's why I talk a lot about intent versus impact.
So there's that, but there's also like, okay, so I think, I'm pretty sure I got into college because I was a diversity pick, because I'm disabled, and and I definitely played that up in my college essay and all of that. And I knew I had to, because I'm a terrible standardized test taker. At the time when I was like, you know, 18 and I really wanted to get out of my, where I grew up, like, I was like, I don't really care if they pick me because of, like, I'm a diversity. I just want to foot in the door. I just want to get out. So I just, like, but this was like, of course, I don't want to like age myself, but like more than 10 years ago now, 14 years ago, 15. Oh my God.
Win aging self. So,
like it is kind of sad that like we haven't made it further than that right now in the year 2020.
Yeah. I have to say, don't ever say that you had to play up your disability, because it's your lived experience. So you didn't, you were just being matter of fact, right? So like my disability, I talk about it and I put it out there, and it's not like, it's not that I need to be treated a certain way or like have any type of pity. It's like, this is the reality of my situation. This is what I, you know, have to deal with. And interestingly enough, when I, like a year after going full-time into this diversity work is when I started to have my stuff. So I have a heart condition that's very rare, where my body essentially thinks it's having a heart attack all the time. And so I have to take medication. I'm in pain on my left side of my body. I have a handicap placard. People judge me because I look able-bodied because it's an invisible illness and all these things that come from it. So I was already advocating for Black people, people of color, women, and now I am also advocate for invisible illness and disability. So it like works really well for my brand. But it's not, I wouldn't wish, you know, pain or having to have accommodation on anyone.
This discussion has been going on for a long time, and I think it renewed a little bit when Little Women came out last year. What would be better for representation and, you know, diversity, belonging, all these things? Is it kind of having remakes and reversionings of essentially white stories, or is it better to be focusing on, you know, original stories coming from Black, Indigenous people of color? And I feel like there's been different people with different perspectives. So I was just curious what yours would be.
So I'm always for, I love creative people. I love authors and directors of photography and directors. There are so many ways to image a book and present it that would not only be great for the author of the book, but if there's a screenplay writer who may be different from the author of the book, but so it's such a wonderful opportunity to bring Black, Indigenous people of color together or have a Black production. And I think and firmly believe that there are so many stories that have not been told, like we're seeing with the New York Times bestseller list, where stories that have already been out, books that have already been out, are getting the highlight now. And I would love to see that with the film industry, to see that happen, because they're going to deal with the same thing that all the other businesses and companies are dealing with. So it's finding that, you know, queer Black writer in Ohio that has a story, you know, and they are in a position where they have an option before the book comes out. And then there's a targeted similar release, right? And having that go out and what that does for Black people is profound.
Mm-hmm.
It's profound. I don't need to see updates of anything, because there's already a version, yeah, you know, of it. And the story was written by a white person. So why do I want to see the Black version of the white person's story? I don't want to see that. I'm excited to see, whenever it happens, Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. And a lot of people aren't talking about that book now, but it's incredibly insightful and helpful for, you know, non-Black people, white people who are going through their journey, their educational experience. So I'm excited to see that movie when that comes out. I feel like there's going to be they'll be conscious about how that's done in production. What's another one?
Yeah, that's my other question. If there's any books or anything that you feel like is ripe for adaptation for the screen that you would love to see that people aren't talking about yet.
I think Austin Channing Brown's book would be good for a film, because it's all about storytelling. I'm Still Here, Black Dignity in a World Made for Whiteness. But she has these stories and antidotes of what she experienced that I could see, obviously, because I'm Black. But just the imagery of, you know, being at a pool, driving in the car, going somewhere for the summer, coming back into this location, and having that visual so people can see the story of what she experienced, I think would be very helpful. So those are like the ones that I think of for the most part. But it's really a time for publishers and agents, studios, productions, creatives, everyone to really look at how can we amplify Black voices, not just right now, because right now anti-racism is also the new sexy when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, but continue that moving forward.
Absolutely.
We have 4 minutes left, so I want to ask you,
What are you doing for self-care right now?
Self-care is a great and horrible thing for me right now. My days look like emails from 6-7 in the morning to talk to meetings till about 9 o'clock at night, sometimes 10. So it's been really hard to self-care, but self-care right now looks like I'm going to actually have the weekend off.
Yes.
So, I'm excited about that. I heard eating is good. Yeah. I haven't had one single thing to eat today.
Water, drinking water, also great.
Water is great. I definitely drink that. No, I have not had anything to eat today. I will at some point. Taking baths. THC CBD combos help me like relax. So whether it is Epsom salts or gummies or whatever. So I'm finding ways to reconnect back to my joy. And it's happening this week because I'm like singing again, like randomly listening to music and stuff like that. And that's self-care too. I just know right now I'm making a temporary sacrifice to make this nation a better place.
Well, we appreciate you. I think you're the best fairy god Oprah a lady could ask for. And just thank you so much for giving us so much time and talking to us and about your work.
Yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. I'm happy to be here. I'm very proud of both of you for amplifying voices, your own and other people, the guests that you have on here, and disrupting the publishing space. I like it.
That's our show this week. Thanks so much for listening. And special thanks again to Dr. Akilah Kadeh for joining us and guiding us through this very important discussion. Dr. Kadeh has her own podcast, Change Kadeh, now in its second season. We highly recommend you subscribe and listen on Spotify or iTunes. In particular, episode 18, entitled For White Women, is a great listen, not just for white women, but for all non-Black women who are looking to be better allies and looking to understand how they can best engage in this work. You can also follow Dr. Kadeh on Instagram and Twitter at Change Kadeh. You can also check out her website, changekadeh.com, find out more info about the work that she does, the services she offers. There are power and privilege workshops and a ton of other great information that we highly recommend you look into. Thanks again, everyone, and be safe.